Hi, my name is Ken. I'm an alcoholic. What a sick looking group. It's really nice to be here so far. I'm looking back there. Boy, talk about encouragement. There's a sign over that coffee thing that says beer garden. I mean, like, anytime you feel a little slack, your powder just runs when you see something like that. I want to thank Clint and all the folks on the committee for inviting me over, and it's just been a real, real nice time. I've enjoyed meeting and spending some time with the other speakers. I really enjoyed Don last night, Norma's husband, because, you know, he really is an alcoholic. And I also want to thank Dale for being such a terrific host. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention his name. Dale and I pulled into the parking lot last night, and I know they do things different in Minnesota, but Don got out of his car. It was still running. He left the keys in it, and he closed the door. I don't know why. We just don't do that in Brooklyn, you know? So I waited a few minutes because I didn't want to play the role of the Al-Anon. But I thought there was something remiss when he started walking away. And I said, Don, your car's still running. He said, doesn't make any difference. The keys are in it. You know, I love guys like that, you know, because that's what this thing is all about. It's several people mentioned it. It's about perception. It's what goes on in our heads and stuff. It's like the alcoholic who meets the devil, and the devil says, I want to make a pact with you. And the alcoholic says, okay, what do I get? Very good alcoholic. And the devil says, well, he says, as long as you're alive, you can have all the booze you want, whatever flavor you want, whatever kind you want, as often as you want, and it won't cost you anything, and I guarantee you'll live to be at least 80. The alcoholic says, okay. He says, now, what do you get? And the devil says, well, when you die, I take your soul, and you live in hell with me for eternity. And the alcoholic says, okay, what's the catch? You know? You know, I relate to that stuff. I always had these things going on in my head, and I was always afraid to tell them to anyone because it was scary. You know? I love the guys who come in and they say they had all these wonderful thoughts and ideas and, you know, inventions going on in their head. You know, what was going on in my head were things like, if my knees bent the other way, what would chairs look like? You know? Oh, you guys relate to that, huh? Good, we're going to have a good night. You know, the other day I saw an article about Mother Teresa, and I said, I wonder when she retires if she'll do volunteer work. You know, like, you know, that's the kind of stuff that was always happening to me. And it carried over into business. You know, something in my head would sound like a good business idea, and then it would become a catastrophe. You know, like, I thought, why don't we just sell hearing aids over the telephone? You know? Yeah. And that's the way my mind went all the time. You know, it was just like, eh. And my mom used to look at me sometimes because she knew this stuff was going on. I guess I had that look like Wile E. Coyote, you know, like. And I would twitch a little bit. And people were always evaluating me. I always had to go and get evaluated by someone, you know? I thought that I spent most of my elementary school in the office. And I did. But like, you know, teachers would say things to be cute, and I would think of cute answers. Like a teacher said to me one day, since I was talking while he was talking, he said, Devaney. And I stood up, and he said, why don't you tell us all about the Civil War? It won't take you very long. And I said, well, why don't you tell us all you know? It won't take you any longer, you know? And that's the kind of stuff went on in my head. You know? And I remember when Kennedy was running for office, and I was drinking in a bar in New York, and the guy said, who are you going to vote for? And I said, John Kennedy. He says, I know why you're voting for him. I said, why? He said, because he's Irish Catholic. I said, no, stupid, I'm going to vote for him because I'm Irish Catholic. You know? Now, the scary part of all this is it didn't sound that bad up here. And I'm here all the time, you know? You guys will get a quick hour of this and you'll be on your way to normal living. I'll be going home telling myself a story that I never heard, you know? And if I have heard it, I say, forget it, you know? I already know the punchline, you know? But that's the way my mind is, you know? I just go like that all the time. And that's why I like in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, one of the things that's talked about now at meetings, and I have no argument with it, but several people over the last 10 years have ingratiated into the vocabulary of our meetings, it's denial, the word denial. Now, I got no argument with denial, but denial is a wispy word. You look it up in the dictionary, and it says something to the effect, it's an individual who knows the truth and just doesn't want to own up to it. That's denial. And you hear people saying, he's in denial. That's not what the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says. It uses the word delusion. Delusion. You look up the word delusion, it says psychotic thought. Where the individual involved has no idea of the truth. That's delusion. You know? Hell, you know, denial is spiritual growth. You're only about that far away from rigorous honesty, you know? And I liked what I saw here today because as people were coming in, they were being stopped and they were being greeted, and I love to see that. And I love to hear about somebody who was here 5 years ago, is celebrating a birthday, and they've been sober 5 years as a result of coming to that first convention. That's terrific stuff. You have absolutely no idea what goes on here, unless you're here. What does he mean by that, Lara? Up till now, I was kind of enjoying him. But I notice he's slipping away. But did you ever notice if people don't want to come to AA, nothing will stop them? You know? You know, they want to sneak in and make cameo appearances. I'm here, but not for long, you know? And you suggest they read the book and that kind of stuff, just scares the hell out of them, you know? One of the things I'd like to do if I had any power, which I don't, but I would do away with all these self-help books. I would take every self-help book off the market, I would get rid of it, and I would write one book and we'd all collaborate on it. And it would be called, I'm an asshole, you're an asshole. You know? And it could be like the grapevine, we send in our best stuff, you know? Could you believe I'm this dumb? You know? And then this way, when anybody challenges, you just say, hey, it's right here in the book. Instead, you have people running around trying to figure out something. They have no idea what's going on. You know, it's like watching folks changing deck chairs on the Titanic. You know, they run over here and they run over there and they get a better view, but the whole boat's going down. And the people who really love them say, you know, come to meetings. Yeah, yeah, I'll get around to it. Some guy called me the other night. He said, hey, I'm going to watch this TV show. It's about an alcoholic. I said, no kidding. He said, do you ever watch it? I said, no. I go to meetings where there's real alcoholics. You know, like, why do I want to stay home and watch a TV show about me? I want to go where the fun is, you know, where the real sickies are. And that's why I enjoy them. And alcoholics, it's always about perception, and that's why people can't figure us out. I like the theme here, sunlight of the spirit. I remember coming across that in the fourth step. You know, I remember looking at the fourth step, and it was broken down basically into four major areas for me. And the first area was, I had to get familiar with the truth. I had no idea what the truth is. And I like what Socrates says, and I know for sure he was not an alcoholic. He was too simple. They asked him what truth was, and he said, what is, and what is not, is not. You ask a real alcoholic that question, I hope you got a summer. you know? Well, it goes way back, you know? Way before you got here, you know? But you can do something with truth. You have to get rid of fiction. And when I came here, I couldn't tell them apart. I had delusion. I wasn't in denial. I hadn't gotten that far along yet. But it was delusion. I didn't know anything. And I pretended to know everything. And it's tough pretending to know everything when you don't know anything. Particularly if some people are fooled by your pretending and they think you know something. And then you got to start putting fact into it. You know? That's the way alcoholics use numbers. We use numbers much like lampposts, more for support than for anything else, you know? we don't want anybody to know that we don't know until we're ready. You know? And it's always our idea. You know, it's always got to be our idea. I love that about alcoholics. We just never give up. You get a newcomer and they get awfully confused because you say, he says, well, what am I supposed to do? We say, well, let's read some of the power phrases here. Let go, let God. Turn it over. Drop the rock. Abandon yourself. Acceptance. There is one who has all power. God is everything or he's nothing. Now, where do you see your role in this? And you can keep a newcomer busy for a week. Because he's pretending he's knowing what you don't know and you just told him. That's an old timer. You go up to an old timer, you say, how come you always answer a question with a question? Do I? Yeah. No. You used to ask my sponsor, what do you do when you feel procrastination coming on? He said, put it off. No. And what you guys are doing right now is the healthiest thing in the world, laughing. That's one of the reasons I love to do this kind of stuff, because I love to hear people laugh. I mean, I don't like people to get up and say, my name is Joe. I'm 3 years sober. I'm happy. You know? This guy looks like he should have been a hemorrhoid. You know, he's got a... If you're so happy, tell your face, you know? It's a program of attraction. That kind of guy would really attract me. And we have minds that, you know, we reach things and we can get to the right answer and never know the truth. And it's because what people are saying is not what we're hearing. And what they're hearing is not what we're saying. And with all that hearing and saying and nobody knowing... We call it sharing. Oh, no. It's like the teacher said to the kid in Brooklyn. She says, how many days of the week begin with the letter T? He said, two. She said, very good. What are they? He said, today and tomorrow. See, you can luck out and get the right answer and be as far away from the truth as before you started. You know? She said to the same kid, she said, I'm writing down the title of a Christmas song called Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Look at it carefully and tell me how many D's are in Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. So the kid studies it, looks up and says, 38. She said, how'd you get that? He said, dee 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 dee. And that's what goes on. So the first part of that fourth step is getting to the truth. Not something that looks like the truth, but getting to the truth. And you'll know when you get there because it'll kind of tick you off. You know? And the second part of that is coming to the realization that we suffer from a spiritual malady. And the book says when the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. Mentally and physically. And the spiritual malady, I had to be here for a long time. before I realized the spiritual malady was caused by selfishness and self-centeredness. That's what the spiritual malady was about. I mean, I used to think it very, I didn't know what it, you know, how to understand people. I used to say, why do you think I'm so unreasonable to my wife? All I want is my own way. You know? And she'd kind of look at you. Like she just caught her hand in the door or something, you know? Like, and she was a great gal. She just didn't know anything about alcoholism. She didn't know anything about alcoholics. She used to say things like, that's your second drink. And I'd say, honey, why don't you forget it and just go ahead and finish your breakfast, you know? So I had to come in that second part of that fourth step to overcome this spiritual malady, and that meant I had to stop being selfish and self-centered. And so I had to start writing things down to see where I was selfish and self-centered. And as it says in that step, it says, if you want to be in the sunlight of the Spirit, you have to get rid of that stuff. You just have to get rid of it. You can't be in the sunlight of the Spirit and be selfish and self-centered. So I wrote it down. I said, write it down, just like it said. I'm no fool. I went to meetings for 3 months before I realized everybody had a different color name tag than I did. They all had blue name tags, and I had a red name tag. And so finally, after I got my 90-day token, I stormed up to the secretary, and I said, how come I have a red name tag and everybody else has a blue name tag? And she said, oh, Ken, now you're ready for blue. And she took it off, she put it on. You just can't slip too much by me. So the third part of this fourth step, after I decided I was going to find truth, and then I decided I was going to overcome this spiritual malady of selfishness, the third thing was I had to look at what was going on. And what I noticed is a lot of people did crazy things. And they were spiritually sick too, just like the step says. And that's as far as most of us ever got. And that's what the book tells us. That's as far as most of us ever got. Today, there's a whole industry about that. I mean, there's a whole industry out there telling you, well, you know, the reason you're the way you are is because this happened and that happened and this happened. And they mean well. But they don't understand that if you just get hung up there, you never grow. And so sooner or later, you got to get to the fourth part is, and that's the tough part, is to see where I was at fault, to see what I did that caused some havoc in my life. You know, I did a lot of things that caused a lot of havoc. I had a lot of bad ideas that I thought were good ideas. I had a lot of old ideas that I thought were new ideas. I just didn't know. Remember I told you that starting out. And the reality was, you know, there was something about stealing things. And I watched the guys who know, and if you went into a grocery store and you had a pistol, you had to make a lot of noise. It'd be like, put your hands up, I have a pistol, I have a pistol. You had to scream and yell and carry on. But you go in there with a shotgun and go, shh. You suddenly became the express lane, you know? Nobody asked you too many questions. It was like, yes, sir, no, sir, you know? And so when I got here, it was about my sponsor who was just out to visit me in San Diego saying to me, you know, boy, you're just a good loser. And you're trying to be a winner, and you don't know how to be a winner. You're just a good loser. And I say, what do you mean by that? He said, you don't know what it is to win, because you've never won. Even when you thought you won, you haven't won. And he was right, because all I ever did was put myself in a pickle to do something else. I was never advancing. I was always reclining. You know, I never knew what was going on. And he came out to visit me, and God love him, it's nice to be around people who remember you when you first come in. And we were sitting there with a guy by the name of Truck Ed, who Clint knows, and a guy who was at my first AA meeting, who's now my neighbor. And between the four of us, we had 108 years of sobriety. And if I could hang out here till July, I'll have 24 years, and I had the least sobriety. And boy, it's something about having the least sobriety. Oh, thank you, thank you, thank you. Changed my whole life. And, you know, we were down on the beach and we were in this restaurant where they're roller skating by. You know, it's a typical California scene, and they're rollerblading and riding bikes, and the women are wearing, what do you call it, dental floss stuff. And it's like, and they serve our food. Now, my sponsor has gotten to be very, very spiritual. So as soon as the food came out, the three of us who live in San Diego, we start to eat. He grabs my hand and he grabs the other guy's hand and he says, "Dear Lord." Well, as soon as he said that, because he's from New York, he doesn't whisper, people at the other tables kind of looked. And he proceeded to give a talk which I thought lasted a half hour. The other guy said it was 3 to 5 minutes. But it went something like this. "Dear Lord, it's nice to be here with Kenny and the boys. They're all sober, Lord, and not drinking, and none of them are going to jail." By now, the people are looking to change tables, you know, like people who are skating by are going further out by the, you know. Nobody's leaning on the wall anymore, just looking over. They're all moving. And then he said some things which were, you know, truthful, but a little hurtful. He said to Trucker Eddie, he said, "Do you remember when this bozo came in?" He said, "If he could have moved anchors, there wouldn't have been a boat in the harbor, you know?" And I had an idea that you couldn't have private property, you know? I just thought, you know, if you had it laying around loose and there wasn't a lock on it, it should be moved someplace else. And I used to get into a lot of trouble finding things before people officially lost them. It wasn't like I was serious about this. I would just do it. You know, somebody would mention casually their kid was having a birthday and they needed a bike. I walked through a store and see a bike assembly. I figured, you know, that was before I realized God was doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. It was already assembled and everything. So I just took it. Had you stopped me right then and there on this perception thing and said, "Ha, you're stealing a bike," I would have said, "No, Joe's kid's having a birthday and he needs a bike." I didn't understand. I had no idea. When I was being brought up for more serious things, I had no idea what was going on. I remember saying to a guy one night in a lockup, "How do you know if you're an alcoholic?" He said, "That's easy, pal." He said, "See that visitor light?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "When it goes out, some of these folks go home." Seemed to me I wasn't moving very far. Seemed to me he knew something. But that's the way it was. It was always stuff going on. And then when I got to AA, it was a very funny thing. You know, how many in the room here tonight have less than a year sobriety? Can I see your hands, please? Look at that. God bless you. About 20-25% of the people here. You're going to hear a lot of people talking to you about the promises in the big book. At all the good meetings they have one, I'd hold one up and show you. But it's a blue book. It looks about this big. It says Alcoholics Anonymous on the cover. You'll know it when you see it. But there's promises in there. And people always talk about the promises. But for you folks who have less than a year, there's the early bird promises. And very few people talk about the early bird promises. Number one is you will consistently know what city, state, and country you're in. Number two, you will answer the door with reckless abandon. Number three is you will intuitively know when the phone is ringing. And number four, and this doesn't happen early on, you know, it's like most of the promises, it says sometimes slowly, sometimes quickly. But this last one, sooner or later, someday, you will go into the toilet and you will have a solid bowel movement. For many of you, it will be your initial spiritual experience. If you're fortunate enough to have an Al-Anon in your life, call her in, you know. Honey, honey. Al-Anons. They're so truthful. It's like the guy who was new to AA and he went home and he said to his Al-Anon wife, he said, honey, can I ask you something honestly? And she said, go ahead. He said, do you ever fantasize about other men when we're having sex? And she said, hell no, there's never enough time. You know? That's a... Or like the newcomer who said to his wife, I'm my own worst enemy. And she said, not while I'm alive, you know. But it's really good to hear you guys laugh because you were so serious. I mean, I got up here and I looked out. I looked like, whoa, looked like a terrorist in every chair. But when you're laughing, I know something about laughter that most folks don't know. And that is you cannot laugh and think at the same time. So when you're laughing, you're not thinking. And if you be alcoholic like me, that's tremendous. The other thing is it gives off endorphins. You know, you get these endorphins, and they're very helpful for you. So laugh a lot. And you might as well laugh at you. Everybody else is. You know? Are you talking about me again, Larry? And you know, sometimes in life, things happen, I was thinking that next month, I'll know Clint 20 years. Clint was at the first AA meeting I went to when I came to San Diego. And we've known each other 20 years. And I think over that relationship, and it boils down to the fact that a lot has happened in both of our lives during that period of time. And we've stayed in touch off and on, and we're both sober. And you guys are sitting in this chair tonight, I'm sure there are people that you have intertwined with. And whether you see them on a daily basis or once in a while doesn't make any difference. As soon as you see each other, it's like no time existed in between. And you just take off. And you have roots in AA. And if you're sponsoring people, that's what we talk about. We talk about roots. You know, you want to be the initial Kinta Kinte. You know, you want to be an AA root guy. You want to hang in here. I was listening to Norma during her talk today, and she was talking about, you know, how they got started. And the literature they had was a little fold-out card called Just for Today, and that's all they had. And you think about that. You look around here tonight, the number of people who are here and at other conventions and the people you see at meetings, and it's amazing how this thing was built on the shoulders of giants. Next week we'll be celebrating 59 years of Alcoholics Anonymous. 59 years. And I'm always proud to say it was started initially by some bozo from New York. We're real proud of Bill in Brooklyn. And when he and Bob got together, there was no intermediaries. It was one alcoholic working with another alcoholic. And Bob didn't get this thing right off the bat. He was initially approached by Bill on Mother's Day, but he didn't get this thing until June 10th. And that's the starting date of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's one alcoholic working with another alcoholic. And I hope we sure don't get this thing confused, as Bob suggested. You know, let's not get this thing all messed up with Freud and this one and that one. You know, you hear, I'm not any day now I expect someone to say, my name is Lou and I'm an alcoholic. Or really, I'm horizontally challenged, you know. Vertical Lou. But you know, we label the waves, we miss the ocean. You got people trying to figure out things there are no answers for. This is not a logical world. This is a totally illogical world. And if you don't have a spiritual base, you'll go crazy. You're either going to have a breakdown in AA or you're going to have breakthroughs. That's just the way it is. You know, this is not a logical world. If this were a logical world, men would ride side saddle. You know? I'd like to see my friend Jeff at Maverick. And things happen. You know, I had two boys. I have one boy left. And in July of last year, my son was out and he was doing the thing he wanted to do best. He was entertaining. He was on a cruise ship going around the world. And I got a call saying his health was failing and he was coming home. And when he arrived home, he was in full-blown AIDS. And that was July 8th. and he was dead by September 7th. And during that less than two month cycle, he lost his hearing, he lost his eyesight, he just deteriorated. And all during that time, and some of the folks who were here tonight were very supportive during that period, who drove over here. And there was AA people at my door, and there was AA people supporting me. And it was the toughest thing I ever went through in my entire life. When I divorced in 1981, these kids stayed with me, and I got a chance to be a single parent. And I went to the high school deal, and I was part of their lives, everyday life. And suddenly he was real sick, and he was going downhill fast. And I know God has a great sense of humor, because my wife, his mom, started coming to my house. And I got to meet my husband-in-law. And we got to participate in doing what was the big focus for us as a family at that time, and that is taking care of this young man who had just turned 29 that May. And watching him go downhill and watching him hang in there and do the best he could, and moving him to hospice the Friday before Labor Day, and having him come out of a coma long enough to tell him that he was in hospice and there was nothing they could do for him. They'd make him as comfortable as they could. And he looked at that time and he said, "I am so glad you guys are here. I love you. Thanks for hanging in there with me." And he talked to his brother and he talked to his mom and then he talked to me. And I was holding him in my arms. And I didn't want to let go. But I had learned here that you let go. If you love someone, you let them go. You don't always like the direction they're going. You don't like what's happening, but you recognize that there's a power greater than yourself, and somehow that power has its own game plan. And so you let go. And it was terrific for me, because he looked up and he said, "You take care of yourself, Dad. I love you, and this is okay. I'm going to do real good with this." He said, "I'm not afraid." And he closed his eyes, and that was it. He was gone. And he lasted physically a little bit longer. And the Friday, he died on a Tuesday, September the 7th, and we had a deal for him, a memorial service on Friday, that Friday, just a couple of days after, and I just thought there'd be a couple of people there because we didn't make a big thing of it. And the church was full of people from Alcoholics Anonymous. My family was there. Clint was there. People from my family were there. They were all part of this thing. And I just felt inside like something had busted open in me, and I didn't know if it would ever close again. And what came out of that experience is that there's a type of pain that you get to experience in recovery that moves you to the point that you'll never be the same way again. You know, knowledge informs, but a spiritual experience transforms. And there's a certain kind of pain that never leaves you where it finds you. It leaves you in a whole different place. And you have a whole different outlook on life. And it's not like it's a better outlook than anybody else's. It's not aloof to anybody else's. It's just you see things differently. And you come to a reality which the early guys in AA knew. And that is, sooner or later, everything in your life, physical and material and relationship-wise, is going to be taken away from you. Either you'll leave it or it will leave you. And it's not until you can accept that, I don't believe, until you can start to really live. You know, there's a funny thing about all truth. It's paradoxical. It seems to be this way, but it's that way. And the interesting thing is that during this period, I got a chance to see God in action in my life. I didn't think of a drink. That wasn't part of it. I just didn't know if physically I could live. I just didn't know if it, I wasn't suicidal. I wasn't in depression. It was just the pain was so immense that I just felt, I can't live with this pain. And day by day, things happen. And you get to see things differently. Now that pain doesn't go away. It will always be there. But now it's a special pain. It's a special pain because it allows me to go and live life completely. And one of the things that came out of that for me was I learned that this world has no power. Now I understood that intellectually for a lot of years, but now I understood it in my heart. This world has no power. The only power here in anything is the power we give it. And it took me a long time to figure that out. It took me up until about 6-7 months ago. And yet I understood the prayers. You know, let go and let God. And there's a line in that book that sustained me through that whole period, and it was either God is everything or God is nothing. It's not until you can look into the abyss and see absolutely nothing that you can start to realize that there's really something there. I never realized how important God was until I realized it was all I had. I didn't have anything else. Everything else will just go. I mean, I've been through the same cycle of things that people have been here, been through. But the nice part about it is you come out the other side. And when you come out the other side, you're a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous who has an experience that you can now share with countless others. And it's not about a theory of something, it's the reality of something. And it's just an amazing process. I know what goes on up here. I still have crazy thoughts. I still enjoy laughing. I hope I never forget how to laugh. But at the same time, I want to understand the seriousness of life and of recovery. Life and death. We were talking about that at dinner tonight. Can you imagine what a newcomer experiences when he comes in and he hears someone say, "You have a disease. This disease can kill you. It can ravage your home. It can take everything of value away from you." And the guy says, "Do you have this disease?" "Oh yeah, I'm grateful." You know? Can you imagine what goes on in a newcomer's head when he hears that? It's like, well, how do I win here? You surrender. "Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. How do I keep it?" "You give it away." "Oh yeah, I think I'm starting to get the beat, you know?" And everything is different. You know, you look at California in 74. I was still in that kitchen. I didn't think I'd ever come up for parole. Every time I thought I was getting close, you know, I would do something so everybody could see it. And they'd say, "No, you just don't understand. Get back in that kitchen." And then I'd wait until all the important guys in the meeting were around, and I'd do something that was real obvious. You know, I'd run over and clean up after a newcomer spill or something, and, you know. "Yeah, get back in that kitchen." I just didn't understand it. I said, "Well, how do you get out of this kitchen?" "Well, someday you won't have to ask that question." They were so informative, you know. And then every time you tell your sponsor something, you'd say, "Good." When I was new, I'd call them up and say, "I'm going to jail." "Good, that's where you belong." "My wife and kids are gone." "Smart lady. Smart lady." And then he'd let me go on for a few minutes, and then he'd say, like, "Well, Ken, maybe you'll get lucky and die tonight." And suddenly I had a whole different priority, you know? But if you're new in AA, I'll tell you this. What you make in life financially is called a living. But what you give is called a life. And that's what makes you a life. You go out and you just start giving. And you don't know what's going on. You just start giving. It's like the 5 loaves and the 2 fishes. The more you give it away, the more you seem to have. And you go around and you hear people who are just doing this on a daily basis, and that's why it's great to hear people who have, like Tommy and Norma and Bill, and people have been here, and they say things like, you know, "Something happened." Isn't that amazing? We have tons and tons of literature talking about alcoholism, and the big book just simply says, when the alcoholic drinks, something happens. I don't think that's overly detailed, do you? When I drank, something always happened. And usually to me, you know? I mean, I would go into a bar for the infamous one. Did you ever stop just for one? I mean, like, you're on your way home, you're just gonna have one. And the car knows the way anyway. It goes there without you, you know? And you go in and you order a drink and you look down the bar and there's a guy down there with a smiling face and you think, boy, there's a nice guy. And you look down the other end and there's a gal who has tremendous scar tissue. Looks like she just came out of the hospital that day. And you, ooh, ooh. And maybe you order a second drink. Before that evening's over, you're punching out the nice guy because he's coming on to the ugly broad who's now your date. You know? And that comes under the general heading, "Something happened." Oh, yeah. Just something. In alcoholics, we have a language all our own. You see, we understand each other where no one else does. Somebody calls you in the middle of the night, and you say, "How you doing?" They say, "Fine." You know things couldn't be worse for that person. So for third party to listen in, it would be very, very confusing. They don't understand the language. And it takes us 10 or 15 years. In the beginning, we just understand some of it. Oh, I think I dated her sister. But the deal is that life gets crazy, you know? And alcoholics have their own thing. It's like the three alcoholics who were ready to come home from the mental institution. And they had to go before the psychiatrist. And the psychiatrist said to the first one, they're all three standing there. He said, "I'm going to ask you a couple of simple questions. In fact, really, I'll just ask you one. And then you can go home." He said, "How much is 3 times 3? And the first alcoholic says, "117. I got to stay just a little bit longer. Just a little bit longer. And he says to the second one, "How much is 3 times 3? He says, "Tuesday. Defiantly. "I'm sorry, you're just going to have to stay just a wee bit longer." He says to the third guy, "How much is 3 times 3? He says, "9. He says, "Oh, thank God." He said, "You can go home." He said, "How'd you figure that out?" He said, "I just took Tuesday from 117. See, now everybody in this place gets that joke. You try telling that at the PTA. "Well, like, didn't the guy understand that 3 times? It's like trying to tell people you were once in a gunfight and you were the only one who didn't have a gun. You know? Alcoholics understand that. It's just something happened. I was into action, I just wasn't properly prepared. And the vision for me was I wanted to get the hell out of there." I mean, I read this book and I'm fascinated every time I read it. The whole of page 68 deals with fear. And as soon as you get by fear, 69 deals with sex. Now, I don't know about you, but I grew up in Brooklyn back in the 50s. They used to say premarital sex was a sin. The way we did it in Brooklyn was a crime. You know? We all propose with the same two words. "You what?" You know? It was very romantic. You know? We bought the most current sex manual and then we did both positions. But that's just the way life was. You know, it was different. And then I came into Alcoholics Anonymous and it got different every day. People said to me, "What's happening to you?" I said, "I don't know, I'm going to AA. And people would say, "What's it about?" And I'd say, "I don't know. You make coffee, you stay in the humility kitchen. Everybody knows what's wrong with you, but nobody tells you." The group collectively talks about you, but nobody talks to you. We have more people decide not to come every day, and the meetings are getting bigger. And they always want to be, you know, helpful, so they keep going. You know, you just keep going, boy. It's doing you some good, you know. But how do you explain this thing? How do you explain a miracle to somebody who has a logical mind? You know, logical thinking can only take you so far that you either have to stop thinking or become illogical. And in Alcoholics Anonymous, we do both. When we stop thinking, we call it meditation. We don't know anything, but we give it a word, you know. And then we say things like, you need to have a conscious contact, which means you had an unconscious contact and just didn't know. This is the toughest thing to explain to a newcomer. No wonder they have trouble. And the old timers just don't say a whole lot. "You doing any service work?" "I don't understand it." You know, I hope I never understand it. I watch the people who know a lot about this.
They usually always get 90-day tokens. The longer you're here, the less you know. So if you want what I have, you're going to have to do what I did. Forget everything I knew and find out I operate better. People say things like, do you believe in miracles? Hell no, I'm an AA. We expect them. You know, we just count on them. How do you explain some slob job crawling out of a dumpster and then 2 years later, I'm 2 years sober and I'm the district attorney? I graduated magna cum laude. Yeah. I say, how did that happen? I saw a bumper sticker a while back, kind of could be a logo for AA. And on his bumper sticker it says, which way did they go? How fast are they moving? How many are there? I must find them. I am their leader. You know? I wonder if Bill and Bob ever knew what was going to happen. Can you imagine them today? I know they're overlooking it in one way, but I mean, can you imagine, Bob? Look what they're doing now. You know, I don't want to look, Bill. It's too messy. This is a great experience. I can't tell you how good it looks just looking out at all your smiling faces, and to think at any moment one of you could flip out. And each one of you saying the serenity prayer, saying, I hope it's not the guy sitting in my seat. This is exciting, isn't it? And then you see people coming around and they're scratching stuff that don't itch. And they're working on it. I'm working on it. Guy called me the other day and said, Ken, life is deep. I said, hey, come on down to shallow end with me and the kids. First of all, the water's a lot warmer. And secondly, you can stand up anytime you want. Take the pressure off. I love being sober. I love being a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know, I say this and I hope you understand in the tone in which it's said, but if I never got asked to do this again, if I never got asked to go anywhere and speak again, it really wouldn't change anything. Because I'm the best thing you can be in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm a sober, active member. I sponsor people and I am sponsored. I am part of a program of recovery. And so this is just icing on the cake. And if I never got to go anywhere again, and I'm not applying for that, but it would be like, this is the best thing you can be. I get up in the morning and I'm happy to be alive. You know, a lot of folks don't make it. 98% of the people who die in this country die laying down. So when you get up in the morning, get up, you know. And then go and screw something up, you know, because you don't want to lose your skills. My son worked at one time part-time when he was in high school in La Mesa Convalescent, and there was a woman there, Sarah Bratton. She lived to be 104. And so when he worked there on Friday and Saturday night, he had the privilege of tucking her into bed and putting the sides up on a bed so she wouldn't fall out during the night. And she always said the same thing, and he'd come home and share it with me. And he would help her into the bed, and before she laid down, she'd hold him by the shoulders and say, what do you think, Ken? His name is Ken, too. What do you think, Ken? You think I'll ever amount to anything? And he'd say, hell no, Sarah. And she'd go, whew, the pressure's off, now I can go to sleep. You know? And I sure hope the pressure's off you guys. You know, I hope you're not striving to become something, because there's nothing to become. There's nothing to do. There's no place to go. This is it. You might as well have some fun. You know, every now and again, I got to tell you this. This, for the newcomers, put your fingers over your ears. But every now and again, I still get strobe lights, like, coming through. And I hear music, like, do-do-do-do, do-do-do-do. And I think, they're coming to get me now. And I'm ready to go. See? See? I'm not, I know what's behind curtain number one. I've already peeked. It's AA. It's Alcoholics Anonymous. It's you guys. It's the program. You know, you got to look up the word program once in a while, too. The word program means a series of actions leading towards a goal. And that's what this is. It's a series of actions leading towards a goal. We have a chapter in the big book into action. We don't have a chapter into thinking. You know? Why burden any of us? We have a chapter, we agnostics. We don't have a chapter, the spiritually superior. Everybody here is on the same path, going in the same direction, and no one knows where it is. And we're looking for road signs from the old timers. And they're just like a step ahead, like. I hope they don't realize how little we know. They may not want to come. And I hope before you leave here tonight, after we say the prayer, before you bug out of here, I know there's a 13-step dance, so I'll wind down. You know? Start to pick out your targets of opportunity. Golly, she looks just sick enough for me. What's your name? Star. I really only glitter at night, you know. And they'll be playing that good old honky-tonk music in there, I'm sure, you know. I'm just 2 6-packs away from loving you, you know. Throw a saddle on the stove, mama, we're riding a range tonight, you know. But before you leave here, when you stand up after we've said the prayer, do me a favor and do yourself a favor. Whoever's to the right of you, hug them. And whoever's to the left of you, hug them. I'd hate to think of anyone who'd come to the expense of coming to a roundup here in Flagstaff and not get at least one hug. So do that, would you please? Now, I didn't say these were keepers. These are what we call spontaneous hugs. This is like, what are you doing for June and July, you know? There's a fellow who Clint knows, and he's passed on now, but he was a little Hindu fellow, a little Indian fellow. And every time he came to my house, he would put his hands together, and he would say, Namaste, Ken. And every time he left, he would say, Namaste, Ken. And Namaste, translated very loosely, means the God in me sees the God in you. And as long as the God in me is looking for the God in you, and the God in you is looking for the God in me, we won't hurt each other. We're only on loan here. You know, that's all. It's a day-by-day process. And what you'll come to find out is that if you can get rid of that selfishness and you start to walk in the sunlight of the Spirit, you won't have to talk about love. You'll be love. You'll be love. AA is not a means to an end. It's a means to a means. It gets you started in a direction. It gets you knowing that, hey, there's something there that will always be there. And I don't know what that something is. I may want to give it a name. I may want to dress it up in something that's familiar. But there's always something there. And at times I get to experience that. I get to feel the presence of God. It's just overwhelming. It doesn't happen every day, every moment, but every now and again it happens, and it happens just enough to keep you going. But you got to keep coming back to the program. You got to work the steps, go through the steps. You got to be involved with other people. You got to be willing to put yourself on the line. This isn't about getting yours and moving inland and leaving everybody else on the beachhead. This is about going back to the beach constantly and dragging the people in with you. It's about hanging out with the people who look like they're never going to make it. That's not our call. All spiritual paths, if you break them down, have four basic ingredients. That is, you show up, you listen, you tell the truth, and you leave the results to God. That's every single spiritual path. There's no exception to that. And you find out that God knows what He's doing. He doesn't always share it with us, because we would hear it and do something crazy with it. You know? Well, I think He's a little off stride this time. You know? We butt in because we don't know enough to butt out. You know? Alcoholics climb glass walls to see what's on the other side. I mean, that's just the way we are. There's a country western song out now kind of sums up AA. It says, some days you're the windshield and some days you're the bug. So laugh a lot because, as I said, everybody else is. You know, we individually are the greatest joke there is. And through each one of us, God is trying to become something He's never been before. And we don't want to impede Him with our selfishness. We want Him to get a chance to do whatever it is He's trying to do. And we do that by constantly surrendering. If you're confused about people who are trying to make the program, watch them closely. And you'll notice there's two kinds of people in AA. Those who are taking the steps and moving forward, and they're growing spiritually. And then there's another group that's doing the steps backwards. They start at 12. And it's like, who needs to go to meetings? Do service work. And then they stop prayer and meditation. And then why do a daily inventory? And I hope somebody's going to start to make amends to me. They certainly should. And they work themselves back to step two, where their insanity is restored. And then it's easy to pick up a drink because you're loco anyway, you know? So keep coming back. Have a good time. God loves you and so do I. I'm real glad you're here. Take real good care of one another. We're only on loan. God bless you. Namaste.